This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. We're heading into 4th of July weekend and halfway through 2022. So this hour, we're taking a look back at some of the best All of It interviews from the year. Let's get into it with our first conversation with comedian Roy Wood Jr. He's no stranger to journalism and radio. He started out producing morning shows, and of course you know his work on The Daily Show. And he says in his latest comedy special, Imperfect Messenger, he just hopes everyone can find a way to feel good, even if for a moment. His new comedy special opens with someone having a great time, a ball really. It's his kid, playing in a box. But Roy's comedy, which is no doubt hilarious, is also kind of serious, though of course with a wink and a hearty guffaw. So let's get into it. Here's my conversation with Roy Wood Jr. from January of this year. That is your son playing in the box at the top, right?
Yes, yes, okay. That is my son. And the intention was to just show how simplistic happiness once was for all of us before we got older and it became this weird Rubik's Cube of an equation for us to work our way through.
It's great. He's just digging it. He's just rolling around in it.
To this day, thrilled. Thrilled. He's got a half day at school. You'll probably hear him in the background in a second coming in looking for another box to play with. Like, it's, I don't know. That's really all I was trying to illustrate, mm-hmm. You know, as few words as possible.
When did you realize that you wanted to center some of the special on that question? It's a weird question these days. How are you doing? Not like a Wendy Williams, how are you doing, but how are you doing? What's interesting to you about that question?
I found myself lying to people when they would ask me that question. Mm-hmm. About halfway through the pandemic, and we all have different stresses, you know, no matter where you are and what position you're in society, there is something that was adversely affected when 2020 happened. So in managing that, and then people ask you, how you doing? And then there's a part of you that goes to say the truth, and then you go, I don't feel like, and they can't help me with it. They got their own, you know what, man, I'm fine. Everything's fine. And I think once you get to that space, I was like, well, if I'm doing it, other people must be doing it as well.
It's a great visual. And in the special, you describe people trying to feel good, like trying to get meat out of a crab leg.
Every day is literally just, what's one thing that will make me smile? Please, just one little, and just that little, that nugget of victory that you pull out the shell of a crab leg. That's what happiness feels like some days, when in the midst of all of this stress, you have just that one little thing that just brings you a little bit of joy. And you're just like, yes, finally, a sliver of happiness.
You go get a little tiny fork. You'll do anything to get the meat out of the crab leg.
Yes.
Now, I understand you workshopped this show a bit and in small groups, and you had the no cell phones policy. When did you start workshopping it? And can you explain to folks why that no phone policy is important?
Comedy is the only art form that is created in front of the consumer. Mm-hmm. So you see the mistakes. And the mistakes are part of the beauty of the creation of the final product being presented in one entire chunk, in its entirety. And so I wanted to make sure that we didn't lose that, the reveal of the final polished material. Because also, when you're talking about some of the subjects that we were dealing with in that show, mm-hmm. some of those opinions, some of those jokes and those perspectives start out a little bit ignorant. And you have to start getting a little more perspective. It took talking to a couple of Black British actors and writers to get the Idris Elba bit in a place where I'm not speaking solely from the perspective of ignorant African American, because you want to have a whole approach to the topic. You don't want to just come in from one point. I also want you to consider things that you may not have thought about, mm-hmm. you know, in that bit. You know, you talked about earlier, you know, without giving the bit away, but you talked earlier about this childhood friend of mine that I was trying to get out of of prison or trying to at least get eligible for parole. I have a childhood friend who is, as we speak, in jail. He was the getaway driver in a robbery that turned into a murder in the state of Alabama. If you are present at a murder, you are also charged with murder. There's no negotiating whether or not you knew whether or not they had a gun, which he didn't. Like, the nuance of it does not matter to certain states. And so in unpacking that bit, there was a lot of pain in the room because there's a lot of people who have loved ones that are dead and gone, and they want people like my friend to stay in jail. So I have to find the place to acknowledge that emotion without disrespecting it. And so that takes time to build. And you don't, I don't want a cell phone footage. That's why it's always interesting. You know why it's always interesting? Like 10 years later, when they show you so-and-so's audition for some movie that they're iconic, like you're just now seeing Tom Holland's auditions for Spider-Man.
Right.
But if that had leaked before Spider-Man came out, half the people will go, that movie's gonna suck. And I don't know. There's just a lot of judgment that happens when you see the curation of certain genres of entertainment. And the other reason for bagging the phones was that because of that, you could go harder on jokes and find the edge faster and know that, okay, this is a joke that's just not ready for prime time yet, because those groans equal 9,000 retweets. And I don't want that trouble. So I was able to accelerate the development of this special because we bagged phones, because we were able to take more risks on stage and find where the line was faster. Whereas before, you might tippy toe up to the line of you like when you have a line that you know is going to get you in trouble, you couch it with three or four happy lines to see if the when the truth is, no, I'm just going to say a line.
Right. And it stifles your creativity.
Correct. Because, but then in an unbagged club in New York City, someone will just take that line. And then that's what gets passed around. And then that's the representation of who you are as a comedian, and all of your ideologies are boiled down to 90 seconds of grainy iPhone 8 footage from a club on a Tuesday night where you were just still figuring it out. And, you know, that's the thing about, you know, comedy, you know, why don't we leak footage of your favorite singer singing off key in the booth for 3 hours straight before they get a sip of magic water or throat coat tea or whatever the hell, put that out. But they don't. You get the final mixed product and they've computerized everything and put auto-tuned all the nice fills. Yeah.
Right.
But comedy doesn't get that luxury. And that's part of the beauty of it, but that's also part of the risk of it in these days, because everyone is so reactionary. No one's nuance has left the building a long time ago.
My guest is Roy Wood Jr. His new comedy special is called Imperfect Messenger. So on Twitter, you recently chimed in on this question. What's the worst drive in America of at least 3 hours or more?
Ooh.
And you responded... Ooh. You find a comedian with over 700,000 miles combined across all odometers, a few terrible drives. Beaumont to El Paso is demoralizing.
Terrible.
Birmingham to Memphis, pre-I-22. And in the 90s, before Highway 78 was modernized, going to Memphis from Birmingham meant going through a gang of sundown towns. Serious
yes.
business. Number three, Birmingham, Atlanta to Gatlinburg, Tennessee.
Yeah.
Some white-knuckle driving on that damn mountain.
Yeah, US 23 south of Gatlinburg. Google that one when you have time, people. It's 30 miles an hour for 2 hours. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing but mountain on one side of you and cliff on the other side. And I mean steep cliff. We're talking like a half mile. You will die if you go off that side of the mountain. And not like an incline. I'm talking straight drop. Like you don't even get to roll down the mountain. And have
off.
A shot at living. You're straight down.
No
you
bounce.
Land in somebody's backyard. Yeah. So those drives, you know, if it's one thing I've done, I've earned my stripes to take flights. I've earned my stripes. And, you know, it's a great way to see the country, you know, in a car. But if it's the irony, though, is that the longest drive I ever made as a performer was 15 and a half hours straight, stopping only 3 times for gas. And I don't know if that's bragging or just irresponsible bladder behavior, but if the drive is more than 2 hours now, I shudder at it. I shudder at it. Like, I can't even imagine. Like, I don't know what happened to my attention span. I don't know, but I can't do it anymore.
Beaumont, how did you survive El Paso, it? How did you survive it?
Just CDs. CDs and just youth. Most of that 700K was amassed in my 20s. And I was surviving on Skittles and Cherry Coke at 3 in the morning. Because in those days, if the gig was 5 hours or less from Birmingham, I would go back home that night.
Oh, wow.
So that I could do radio in the morning. And then I would get back in my car and go back to that city to do the show. So I was basically sleeping in 2-3 hour blocks. But during the week, I was not getting like 6 consecutive hours. But you're 23. What do you care? You hooning Big Macs down your neck and still got a six pack.
And it all comes back to radio. Roy, it all comes back to radio.
Yeah, it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. And that's probably one of the things that I'm trying my best to instill in my son is the slow down and enjoying the journey of life. You know, during the shutdown, we took a 27-hour Amtrak back to Alabama. So, you know, he could do the grandma thing. And, you know, we had a sleeper car and, you know, and he really dug it. And, you know, when he's old, when he's a little older, I'll put him through the torturous 8-9 hour road trips where he's just watching things pass by the window. Got to slow these kids down, get them into the mundane, get the creative juices flowing, you know?
He's on the right track. He likes a box.
Yeah, he likes a box.
So when you take your son to your mom's, right?
Correct.
All right. Your mom's, she seems awesome. Is your mom a different person with your son than she was with you?
1,000%. And it's infuriating. It is absolutely infuriating, like to the degree of which she's nicer to him. And then she calls me to make sure that I'm not being too hard on him. Like, I put my son in time out in front of my mom one time and she's like negotiating his freedom like a pretrial lawyer. Well, what if he just sits over here and faces me? What if he just sits with me instead of being alone? I'm like, you don't understand what we're trying to instill here. And you're not going to. That's what grandparents do, though. Grandparents come in and undo all the parenting that you were learning. I'm like, you used to whip me.
Honestly, who are you? Didn't you make me get a switch?
He can't just sit and be quiet. Like, no, you know that boy. Let that boy come on over here now. Come on now. I'm like, all right, Mom, whatever.
Before I let you go, this Fox show you're working on, TV show, the National Guard.
National Guard.
Where are we with this? How'd you get that idea? It sounds really interesting.
That idea came from the New Rochelle shutdown, the first shutdown zone in New York City. I was watching a bunch of coverage of the quarantine zone. And in that quarantine zone, there was literally like, I don't know how to explain it. There was literally like all of these National Guard soldiers in charge of handling COVID spread and COVID testing. This is like week one of the pandemic after Seattle. And I'm going, how much must that suck to just, you're just dude in National Guard. And now all of a sudden you're in charge of the quarantine. Like, no, this is not who I want in charge of this stuff. So it really was, you know, that coupled with, I did 5 USO tours. And talking with some of the guardsmen on some of the shows that we did, and I'm like, there really is this interesting duality to what you do where, you know, when you look at the National Guard, they're a little different from standard, how can I put it? They're a little different from standard active duty in that they respond when American citizens are in distress. But when you really look at the core of what the National Guard does, it's essentially rooted in being a Band-Aid for government dysfunction. Mm-hmm. And so I think that it's an interesting way to show a lot of the things that are going wrong in America through the eyes of a group that's always there to kind of patch things up or kind of be the temp service workers. Because you think of the National Guard traditionally, it's a soup kitchen or helping people out there in natural disaster. There's guardsmen right now as we speak driving school buses in some districts. There's guardsmen as we speak right now working as prison guards because of either staffing shortages or COVID or whatever the heck. So I just thought it was an interesting world to live in. And, you know, Fox agreed. So, you know, we're getting a script into them now, and hopefully we'll hear some good news in a month or two.
That was my conversation with comedian and Daily Show correspondent Roy Wood Jr. His latest special on Paramount Plus is called Imperfect Messenger. After the break, we'll hear about dramatizing science denial, political expediency, and looming climate catastrophe in the form of a giant meteor headed for Earth. Academy Award-winning filmmaker Adam McKay talked with me about his latest film, which was nominated for the Oscar for Best Picture of the Year, Don't Look Up. That's coming up on All of It.